Blog Talk Radio.
Denise Griffiths is your partner in success. Tune in each Friday as virtual assistants, industry expert, web developer, and online entrepreneur Denise Griffiths interviews industry experts from one end of the internet to the other. These expert entrepreneurs freely share their business building knowledge and provide practical guidance that will show you how to build and grow your own very successful business, be it online or traditional brick and mortar. Now, ladies and gentlemen, your partner in success, Denise Griffiths.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to your Partner in Success Radio. Today I have the opportunity to interview Terry Murphy and Don Hudson. And regular listeners will recognize Terry Murphy as she's been on the show before. Terry is the president of Terry Murphy Communications Incorporated, and as a consultant and speaker, she helps to create new relationships using cutting-edge traditional marketing and online communication strategies. And I need to apologize for my voice. I've lost my voice on and off for about 3 weeks, so if I sound a little choppy, just please bear with me. Terry is also a published author of 5 books, including her most recent book with Donald Trump, The Best Real Estate Advice That I Ever Received, and has authored 4 additional books on sales and leadership. She is currently a co-author on a book that addresses how women can improve their selection of a man in a relationship using a little science in the process, and I cannot wait to read that book. She is co-authoring this book with Dr. Paul Green, an industrial psychologist and an expert in behavioral interviewing. Don Hudson is somebody that I have read a lot of his work and love his work. He is an author, a speaker, an expert on negotiations, entrepreneurship, and selling value, excuse me, which means that he is in the business of making people believe that they can do better, and he gives them the skills to do it. Don has addressed over 2/3 of the Fortune 500 companies and has been selected by a number of them to help develop their own corporate university. Today, he is the chairman and CEO of U.S. Learning Incorporated and has made over 5,000 speaking appearances. He's also regularly featured on national television and currently serves on 5 corporate boards. So now y'all can understand why I'm so excited to get to talk with these two. And finally, Don is also the author of 10 books, including his latest book, which is a New York Times bestseller, The 1 Minute Negotiator, which I'm reading, co-authored with George Lucas. So good morning, Terry. Good morning, Don. And I'm so glad to have you guys here. Thank you for coming.
Thank you, Denise. We're glad to be here.
Well, good. So I have so many questions, I don't even know where to start. Why don't we do this? Why don't y'all just kind of jump in, tell people a little bit about yourself if I missed anything, tell people where they can find you on the web, and then I've got tons of questions.
Well, thanks, Denise. This is Don. I'll go first. We're thrilled to be on your show, and I know that you've got a lot of people who are always looking for ideas, so our goal is to give them some today. I think you did a good job of giving our backgrounds. We are both dedicated to helping people increase their income and performance with new cutting-edge ideas on how they can be their best. MySpace, to answer your question more specifically about me, I am an expert on how to sell value rather than cut price. So as a sales trainer, I help companies and individuals preserve their margin and go to market in a differentiated manner that will help separate them from the competition. I also teach negotiations for salespeople and entrepreneurship for the people who want to go out on their own and find their way into the free enterprise marketplace. So those are my sweet spots, and I would entertain any questions you've got about any of those. And any time, I've got Terry right here. We'll turn it over to her.
Thank you. Morning, Terry.
Terry?
Did we lose her?
Right in right now, Denise.
Hey, it's Terry Murphy here, and I'm so excited to be on your show. It's such a great day.
I love having you on my show because for people who don't know this, Terry and I are friends, and we tend to pick each other's brains down to the marrow, if there's marrow in your brain, I don't know. I mean, we get on the phone, and we really, I mean, we solve world hunger. So I'm so glad to have you here today.
I really appreciate it too, Denise. As you know, my goal is to connect people with people and solutions. And so Terry Murphy Communications does that both using traditional and online channels to help people solve problems by giving them the resources that they need. And so it's great to be here. And, of course, Don actually has written, I think, 15 books. I don't know. I didn't check this
15?
Morning.
Oh, gosh.
13, give or take. Well,
I counted 10.
He's in queue for two more. I mean, he probably did that while I was making coffee this morning. But, yeah, we're both overachievers like you. Help people. And so it's great that we could be on the show today. So, and
I'm
as
so
Don
fun.
Being the specialist with selling value and being the, you know, the premier person with both entrepreneurship. As a matter of fact, he did a program this morning already. So we're geared up and ready to help.
Oh, good. One thing that Don said earlier, and you and I have talked about this as well, is, you know, how to help people really get what they deserve for their services. And I'm paraphrasing, but being in the industries that I am, the virtual assistance industry, and of course as a web developer, I am getting so many emails these days from new virtual assistants and even virtual assistants, online business managers who have been in this industry for a while, who are saying, how do I negotiate better rates? How do I find better clients? And it's a huge problem within that particular industry. And one of the things, and Don, I would love to hear what you have to say about this. One of the things that I see new people coming into my industry is, oh, you know, we're going to give you 5 hours free, and I just clench my teeth when I see that. What is your idea about that?
Well, Denise, you don't need to give away anything that you don't need to give away. And sometimes people think, well, you know, the only way I can go to market is I got to give them something free to get them engaged. And
right.
I don't personally feel that's necessary. We do have some premiums we offer from time to time. But if we ever do that, we're reserved in doing it. We do it rarely, and we do it with a very well-thought-out strategy. I mentioned differentiation earlier, Denise. Most people think there are two types of differentiation, product and price. And either your product is truly creative and you sell it with confidence, or you think, you know what, I don't know if I've got anything much better than what my competitors do, so I better be the low price spread. And a lot of people leave so much money on the table because they don't even have confidence in their own offerings. So I say when it comes to quoting prices, go to market with confidence. Know what your sweet spot is. Know what you deliver in terms of great value points, and then confidently quote your prices. And don't flinch, and don't say, well, and don't mealy mouth around about, you know, maybe I could do it for less or anything like that. Confidently quote your prices, and people will appreciate that. And you'll come across as a professional who has confidence in their own ability to deliver, and they'll pay the price in most cases. So I'm one who believes let's protect margin. Let's don't give away the farm for no reason. A lot of people are accommodating in an effort to get engaged in a relationship or to build a relationship. And one of the things we teach in negotiations is that accommodation doesn't build relationships. It only tests them. So confidently quote prices and go to market in a manner that shows that you believe in yourself and your ability to deliver for them.
I agree with you. And I have had – that's how I – when I state my retainer fee, I don't even have to take a deep breath. Here's what it is. Here's the value to you. And if you want to proceed forward, I'd love to. If you don't, then, you know, I can refer you to somebody else who, you know, maybe has a different retainer package or you can afford, to be quite honest. And it doesn't occur to me to try to maneuver my prices around what their needs might be. My prices are my prices. And my value.
I agree, Denise. Let me tell you a quick story. I get, oh, gosh, anywhere from 5 to 10 or 15 calls a month from people who want to be speakers and trainers. And somebody will say, well, call Don Hudson. He's been in the business a long time. So I get absurd questions from these people, and I try to be nice to them. I don't have time to go to lunch with all of them who want to go to lunch, but I will talk to them for a few minutes if they're referred by a friend. But they'll say things like, well, what should I charge? Well, if somebody doesn't have a clue about what they're going to charge, it's not time to talk to me yet, I don't think. But nevertheless, one of the things I say to them is you can be too cheap because if your price is too low, they're not going to think you're any good. You can be too expensive because if you're not a household word yet, they're not going to pay the price for you if you're quoting an enormous fee many times. But I tell people, here's one way you can gauge what your price should be. When you quote a fee to go give a speech in another city, when you're driving to the airport, you need to feel really good about the trip. Because if you're driving to the airport saying to yourself, you know what, I wish I wasn't doing this, I'm only getting X amount of money, then you've priced yourself too low. So everybody's got to find their own threshold there, whether it's selling services in another city or selling your widgets over the phone or on the Internet or what have you.
And Don, too, there's a psychological component, isn't there? I mean, if you're driving to the airport and you're already thinking, oh, man, you know, I'm not getting enough money for this, you've already talked yourself into kind of not enjoying it. You're not going to probably give your all when you get there.
That's exactly right. And, you know, one of the things that's so critical when you're selling professional services is you've got to master the head game. You've got to be ready to go when you get there. It's like showbiz, you know. You got to show up and you got to be present and you've got to be dynamic with your solutions, whatever you're selling.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's the thing we say in professional speaking. You don't have the right to have a down day. You got to get your head in the game. And one of the best programs I ever did, I had 104 degrees of fever, but nobody knew it but me.
Mm-hmm.
You just got to get geared up for it. So there's a psych job there. And for people who have a lack of confidence in their pricing or their own services or whatever, they need to work on that.
They do. And here's the thing, in most industries, and particularly in my two industries, social media right now is huge, and it's going to remain huge because that's how we communicate now. And I will have people come to me and say, oh, well, I'm not really doing anything different than anybody else is doing. Probably not. But are you delivering competent? Are you delivering something that's measurable, that's consistent, that your client loves to work with you? I mean, you stop and take a look at what it is that you're actually providing, the solutions that you're providing, and quit bad-mouthing yourself. I get so tired of people saying, I just don't know. It's like, really? Then get a job. You know, get a job. You're not ready for that.
I agree. Yeah.
I get a little impatient,
of the things...
I have to say.
Denise, I agree with you completely. And on this issue of confidence, one of the things about selling value, I tell salespeople all the time that when you're selling the value of your deliverable, whatever it is, many times you think, if I can just articulate why I'm better than, different from the competition, do that really well, I'm going to get the business. But so many salespeople overlook the one prime reason to get involved in a value-based discussion, and that is to do some discovery and find out what that prospective buyer values. Because if you're going to talk to five people today, you're probably going to have five people with five different dominant buying motives. And as a result of that, you've got to know where their hot button is. And if you can figure that out by asking some really good questions, you'll ultimately deliver a presentation which your prospect helped you design, dramatically increasing the probability of positive results.
And see, that makes perfect sense. I mean, if you you engage in a conversation with them, which to me means you're largely listening. I mean, you ask the pertinent questions when they're appropriate, but you listen. And you're right, you do design exactly the program that they need because you're engaging in a real, genuine, fact-finding conversation with these people, and it just goes from there. Trying to deliver a one-purpose solution or a solution that just covers all your bases is ridiculous. And I'm seeing so many people doing it, and they're just not appealing to their market, sometimes on a one-on-one basis, which is what it takes. You do have to speak to that individual.
Yeah, if they're doing that, they're using an old-school approach, and their days are numbered.
Thought that was it, and I wanted to ask you about that because things are changing so rapidly. Where do you see communication with your customers, your clients, your fan base, if you will? Where do you see that going?
Well, let me tell you one of the biggest epiphanies I've had in the last year or two. When I wrote The 1 Minute Entrepreneur with Dr. Ken Blanchard, who is a master communicator, but Ken's premise is if you really want to be good with people and you really want to develop a solid following, you need to lead with your ears. I mean, there are too many salespeople who talk too much, and they don't listen enough. So I think Ken hit the nail on the head with that one. We've got to be really good listeners. You know, 20, 30 years ago, the proverbial great salesperson was a man or a woman who was extroverted and outgoing and really had a wonderful gift of gab. And in fact, today, in 2012, we're in a world where some of the best communicators are really good because they're expert listeners.
Mm-hmm.
And they are expert at asking questions. And that is such a critical skill set today because it's just different than it used to be.
Right. And in this day, and with social media being what it is, you can't just get out there and blab. People don't have the time the energy or the bandwidth. I mean, if I have somebody blabbing at me, I'm out. You know, my eyes glaze over and I might be standing there looking like I'm paying attention, but I'm not. I'm cooking something in my head. You know, I might be creating a recipe for something.
Yeah.
It's absolutely true. So I want to ask you about, though, Don? There's a phrase that you use called negotiophobia, and I love that word, and I think it's so critical to, you know, what we're talking about now. Can you explain what negotiophobia is and how to overcome it?
Yeah, well, Dr. George Lucas and I, when we wrote The One-Minute Negotiator, we've trademarked the word negotiophobia, and it's based on the idea that most people don't like to negotiate or have at least some reluctance to engage in a negotiation. Negotiophobia is something that we have that's generally based on a lack of skill, a reluctance to move forward, a fear of the unknown, and these are things that will keep us from wanting to get involved in a negotiation. Too many people see a negotiation as combat or confrontation and an unpleasant experience, when in fact it can be a very pleasant experience. And just to elaborate on our premise of that book, what we really put together, Denise, is the idea that there are four negotiation strategies. 90+% of all negotiations that's been taught in the last 30 or 40 years in American business has been win-lose. Here's how you get a bigger morsel of the pie. And then they talk about, here's what you do, they say this, you say this, and you'll get them, as if when you get them, you're going to win and they're going to lose. Now, in their defense, Harvard Business School did come out with a wonderful premise about 13, 14 years ago. They called it the win-win, which is essentially collaborative negotiations, but their belief was you need to go for win-win every time. Well, I love win-win, and collaboration is my preference. However, you can't go for it every time because that's illusional. It simply doesn't work. Our model is we have four negotiation strategies. One of them is collaborate. One of them is compete, one is to accommodate, and one is to avoid. And there's a place for all four of those strategies. But because people have negotiophobia, they don't study negotiations. They don't get involved in the process of learning these types of things. So that's one reason that our book has really helped a lot of people, because it's a simple little 139-page book, but it lays out the matrix of the four styles and our EASY formula for treating negotiophobia. And EASY is an acronym, E-A-S-Y, for engage, assess, and strategize, and that's your one-minute drill. Y for your one-minute drill. So you engage and you say, all right, I think I'm coming into a negotiation. I'm getting my head in the game. I'm listening. I'm observing. And then you go to A, which is assess. Assess your own tendencies in terms of which of those four strategies you generally prefer, and try to assess the predictability of which one of those four strategies the person you're negotiating is going to prefer. And that's going to help you get your head in the game and really understand the direction it's probably going to go, and that'll help you strategize and get prepared to really do well in the negotiation process.
You know, one thing that I'm taking away from this book in particular is this is not just for, you know, people who are trying to negotiate a better salary. And this is just about for anybody. I mean, you can use these techniques in your marriage, in your relationships with your children.
Absolutely.
You know, in your own business. I mean, negotiating is part of what we do every day as far as I'm concerned. I mean, I
negotiate
with my family. I negotiate with my cats. Like, please don't do that. We're constantly negotiating, and I think people don't really understand that when we're doing that.
Yeah, we really do negotiate.
And we're doing it all the time.
Yeah, we negotiate every day, personally and professionally. And
right.
So people who realize that, who find it a little easier to accept the premise that, you know what, I'm doing this all the time anyway, I need to get good at it. One quick example, my co-author George Lucas flew into Nashville from a speaking engagement. His wife and kids drove up from Memphis, and his son was playing in a golf tournament. So in Nashville, he was renting a car to drive about 50 miles away near Dixon, Tennessee, to go to the golf tournament. And he's getting the rental car, and he notices a $100 drop charge because he's going to leave the car and then drive home with his family. Well, he said to the guy at the car rental counter, he said, "Wow, $100? Isn't that a little bit steep? I'm just going to Dixon, Tennessee, a little over 50 miles away." George is thinking if he can just get it down from 100 to 50, he saved a few bucks and it won't take but a minute to try. And the guy said, "You know, sir, that does seem a little steep. What do you have in mind?" "Well, one of our beliefs is you let the other person put the number on the table first." And George said, "Well, I just feel like $100 is way too much. What can you do for me?" And the guy said, "Well, is $25 okay?" And George said, "Well, I had another number in mind, but 25 works." So it took him 30 seconds to save $75. Now, here's what I want to be the takeaway for your listeners on this, Denise. He was willing to get engaged in the game. He was willing to use the skills to enable him to do it right, and he saved $75 in 30 seconds. So get engaged in the process of negotiating and study your options and understand the dynamics of how you can make this work for you every single day.
Absolutely. I'm a firm believer in it just doesn't hurt to ask.
That's right.
I mean, don't be obnoxious about it, obviously. But, I mean, I have a similar story. I was in a Walmart or, you know, some big box store some couple of years ago, and the phone system that I wanted was no longer available, but they had one on display. So I said, "Well, but I want that phone." They said, "Well, it's a display phone. We don't have a box. There's no warranty." And I said, "I don't care. Is there somebody I can speak with? I would like to make an offer on that phone." I got a $200 phone system for $25. Then when you said 25, it reminded me of my phone.
I love
and
it.
A friend of mine was with me, and she said, "Oh, my God, you're negotiating in Walmart." I said, "Yes, but I want that with what I wanted." They were going to toss the phone anyway. I mean,
wow,
it had no box.
Great.
It had no warranty. It was going to go in the trash.
See, it doesn't cost a nickel to engage in a negotiation.
No,
you might just save yourself some money.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And it doesn't hurt to just start the conversation.
Yeah.
It can't possibly hurt. So one thing I wanted to know, too, and I think Terry can help with this. I know we're talking about the anatomy of a negotiation. Terry, how does it differ between women and men, though? I mean, from a gender perspective, how do we operate differently, or do we operate kind of the same?
Well, you know, women, as you know, are different from men.
Right.
And so we have a different thinking process, which doesn't mean one is better than the other. But you have to recognize that women by nature have what we call zeitgeist. And that was identified by Margaret Heffernan, who wrote Willful Blindness and How She Does It, which is about women in business. And one of the predominance in today's market is for us to serve the customer. And so we've always wanted to be, you know, give better service. Well, in today's market, it's more than just creating a better service experience. It's about anticipating what the consumer wants. That's what women are good at because we've been trained for millions of years on something we call intuition. And so that's a good thing. The bad part about women, which is a good part about women, is adaptability. We, by nature, have to be highly adaptable. We have children. We have situations in a home. We are the peacemakers. We want to keep everybody happy. That is death in negotiating. So where adaptability can be okay, it's not considered a strength nor a good tactic in negotiating. So the biggest challenge women have is to change their mindset. And, of course, we don't practice either because we're brought up to be nice and to have everyone like us. So we fail to recognize that anytime there's an opportunity, we can negotiate, and that doesn't mean we're going to be damaging a relationship.
Sorry, I was coughing. No, I agree with you. And I think a lot of women, I have observed a lot of women, I'm not making a blanket statement, my observation of a lot of women in my different programs that work with me and at different levels in my industries are really kind of coming into their own as negotiators, and they're doing it in kind of slow, easy steps, but they're understanding that they don't have to just kind of sit back and take it. They do it. They're finding their voices. They stand up and say, "You know, that's really not what I wanted to do. I don't want to, I'm not happy with that. I'm not happy with this client. I don't like the way, you know, this particular job is going. what do I do to change that? And instead of just, you know, stomping off, I'm not going to do that anymore, they're negotiating, and I'm so proud to see this.
Well,
and
we
a lot
have
of
to
times,
understand.
Terry, they're negotiating with themselves. And I think, do you find that that's where it starts?
Well, you have to understand that you got to be yourself. We're not going to be men. We don't need to go in there like men. We need to be our best selves. And as Don
right.
demonstrated earlier, it doesn't hurt to ask. I mean, that's, you know, there's that fear of negotiating because nobody wants to upset the apple cart. But many women look at situations in terms of decisions they have to make, not opportunities to negotiate. So the number one problem women have is they don't ask. They just simply don't ask. And there was a very good book that was written by Dr. Linda Babcock and Sarah Lashever, Women Don't Ask, and it observed that male students had no problem asking for all sorts of extras, and the female, of course, didn't. And so they were missing a lot of the resources around the table, and that's one of the biggest issues. So often, women don't ask, and it really wasn't even a concern. You know what I'm saying? It's like you should ask for the drapes to be included. You should ask for the basketball hoop to be included if you're in a real estate negotiation. You should ask for the additional extra days for vacation. We just don't simply ask, and that's the number one issue. And I think women, you think women are doing better to negotiate for themselves. One of the things that we know that if you have a little issue with how to get started, one of the best tips I can give you is to negotiate for yourself as forcefully as you would if you were negotiating for someone else, specifically somebody you loved. So
right,
you take
right.
yourself out of it and you say, okay, excuse me, but if I'm going to work and I'm going to recommend Denise, let me just tell you something about that. You come with a different place of confidence, and it's not you.
Right.
So think about negotiating from that platform as another.
I love that idea. I think that is absolutely brilliant. You know, once you do step back and take yourself out of it, you just remove that whole me thing. Perfect. That's a great, great tip. So,
hey, Denise, can I jump in here with an idea?
I wish you would.
This is Don again. One of the things that I think applies to Terry's premise of how women are interpersonally adaptable, and that's such an admirable trait, and it does have an impact on negotiations. But something that impacts negotiations and our sales effort is a premise that we put together here at U.S. Learning, and it goes like this. We believe that trust and stress are inversely proportional in business relationships. So if we do a good job of building trust and becoming a trusted advisor, we're going to get more negotiation opportunities, we're going to have a more compelling personality, we're going to get more referrals, and a lot of good things are going to happen. But see, the old method of selling from the old days, the hard sell and just giving product pitches and that kind of thing, that's all so archaic these days that if that's what we're doing, that's going to stress people out, because with those styles of selling, salespeople typically ask people to make a decision before they're ready, and they haven't built trust. So what happens is stress goes up and trust comes down. You have a long sales cycle and a lousy conversion rate of prospects to buyers. But if we're skilled at building trust and becoming a trusted advisor, essentially what happens is trust is high, stress is low, and then you have a terrific conversion rate of prospects to buyers, and your sales cycle is short. So that lends itself tremendously to a far better not only conversion rate, but ultimately more income and more success.
That's true. And in these days, you know, everything is on the web, and the phrase that you see more often than not these days is know, like, and trust. People simply want to do business with people that they know, like, and trust. And
they really do.
I mean, it makes sense. I do.
Yeah.
I would.
Yeah. Well, let me give you
a
model for.
Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, okay. I was just going to suggest that our model for being a trusted advisor, there are three components to being a trusted advisor. And the three components are, number one, integrity. Because people have got to, they've got to trust you. You've got to do and say what's right. You've got to be honest. So if we've got high character and display integrity, we're on our way to building a strong relationship. The second component is expertise. Because if you're going to be a trusted advisor, the word advisor implies that you're an expert at something. And we've got to, without being egotistical, we've got to project the image that we're highly knowledgeable in our space. The third component of being a trusted advisor, while you probably would have guessed the first two, you probably would not guess this one, it's follow-through. I love to ask people in sales, what is your follow-through reputation? Is it sometimes maybe, or probably not going to respond when we promise we would, or maybe not at all?
Right.
What is someone's follow-up reputation? And that's where we have a wonderful opportunity to exceed people's expectations. So when we have an interaction with someone, and we promise to get back with them on next Wednesday afternoon at 2 o'clock, and today is Friday, well, why don't we, first of all, let's drop them a handwritten note. Let's advance the relationship by doing something everybody knows about but nobody does, which they would receive hopefully prior to next Wednesday's meeting, and then be back in touch with them perhaps by email prior to the face-to-face meeting with follow-up questions or anything that shows additional interest, and then show up a little bit early for the appointment. That's good follow-through. That's what the real pros do.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely, and that can be done in any business, really. But one thing that you said that really strikes a chord with me is, you know, if you're going to promise something, you darn well better deliver it. And so many people don't. And then they do get that reputation, or they get that little bit of distaste. I've had people come to me and say, would you refer me? No. In fact, let me go a step further. No.
Yeah, Terry just made the comment that is very true for women about the importance of building trust and doing it right.
That is true. I mean, we really have to stay on top of that. And sometimes it's just as simple, and I love the idea of sending a card or a note. At the end of each web build, I will send the client, even though I tend to have long-term relationships with my clients even after the website is built and done, I'll send them a thank you note and sometimes a little gift if it's appropriate. I am so excited to have worked with them and so appreciative. I want them to know that I really appreciate their business.
Yeah,
and I don't
absolutely
know too many people who even think to do something like that. It's such a simple thing. But, you know, even children these days, as Terry knows this, as children, we were taught to write thank you cards, birthdays, Christmas, for our Easter baskets. We would write the Easter Bunny a thank you card. People don't seem to do that anymore. And I think that's a lost art. I think it's a shame.
Yeah, it really is, because it's something that's simple, yet it's appreciated. It makes a difference.
It is. It is. And handwritten as opposed to sending an e-card. For those of you who are listening, handwrite it. Go get the card. Handwrite it. So, okay, so what else are we talking about? Well, first of all, before I ask some more questions, where can people find both of you on the web?
Okay, well, my web address is donhutson.com, and that's H-U-T as in Tom, S-O-N. And Terry's is terrymurphy.com, and that's T-E-R-R-I, and Murphy without an E. So we're pretty easy to reach, and we are both here at U.S. Learning. Our global headquarters is in Memphis, Tennessee, and our number is 800-647-9166.
Great. Thank you so, so much. Do you want to mention some of the other books? I know we're talking about negotiating largely, but are there any of your other books that might tie in with this particular topic that people should really take a look at?
Well, yeah, one would be The 1 Minute Entrepreneur. And some people who might be on the call are maybe saying, well, I work for somebody else. I'm not really an entrepreneur. And I really look at it, Denise, like everybody's an entrepreneur. You are president of You Incorporated. You are managing mm-hmm. your career, whether you choose to sell your services to a company or whether you're out on your own, you're managing your career. So I think everybody needs to take advantage of entrepreneurial thinking. One of the models we put together talks about the P's of entrepreneurial success, one of which, of course, is passion. We've got to be excited about what we're doing. We've got to approach every day with a vigor that will enable us to outserve our competition, and we've got to be passionate about every aspect of our job. One is prioritization. We've got to prioritize what's the most important thing I need to be doing right now. And sometimes we don't prioritize well enough, and we end up in non-productive activities, and that's the kind of thing that keeps us from maximizing revenues, minimizing expenses, and having a profitable operation. Another is people. We got to surround ourselves with good people, hopefully some that are smarter than us in certain arenas. You know, years ago, the E-Myth book that came out talked about the concept that if we're going to be a successful entrepreneur, we got to be multifaceted in our talents. And Michael Gerber, who wrote the book, said that so many times people have one vein of great talent, and there are not multiple talents there. So what happens is maybe this person is an inventor. They came up with this wonderful idea, but they know nothing about how to sell it. They know nothing about raising money. They know nothing about many of the critical elements of entrepreneurship, and they end up failing because they didn't have enough talents. So that plays to talk to other people. Surround yourself with competent individuals who can help you grow your company or expand your business. So the other thing is profit. That's another important P, because if you're not making any money, you don't have a career. You got a hobby. We got to figure out how to make money, or we're not going to sustain ourselves.
No,
so those are some of the things that we think make a difference in entrepreneurial thinking.
They really do. And, you know, these days I think entrepreneurship is critically important. You know, with the economy being what it is, with politics being what they are, I think entrepreneurship is beyond critical. And I'm so excited to see more and more people start doing what they need to do to take care of themselves.
Absolutely. You know, one of the things that we talked about in the 1 Minute Entrepreneur is the concept of ego. And this is so important in negotiating and sales and in entrepreneurship. And Ken Blanchard, God bless that man, he's the greatest guy. And he's totally devoid of ego. He is the most humble man. His title he gave himself at the Blanchard Companies is Chief Spiritual Officer. He just wants to help everybody else be their best. And
right.
Ken says, just because you've done something well, don't let your ego eat your brain. So many people get carried away with ego, and they say and do stupid things, and it costs them business. So
it does.
That's an important issue, too.
And, you know, Terry and I have talked about this, too. I'm off on a little bit of a tangent, but when you said ego, this is how my brain works. I'll just apologize straight up. But when you said ego, it reminded me of a conversation that I think Terry and I had recently, which is Terry and I are both high-functioning workaholics, and you know this. And my business coach said, I said, well, that's a good thing, right, when she called me that. And she said, no, that means you're not a fun girl. I went, oh, she's right. But here's the thing. My ego recently, and I probably need to, you know, just really get back into your books and start paying closer attention. In fact, I will this weekend. But I have taken on so much work that my ego is now telling me that my back hurts because I'm in a chair all the time. I'm glued to my monitor. I think my business grew too fast. I just have not been able to say no. And my ego is now saying, you need to say no. Your back hurts. Knock it off. Work smarter. Don't work as hard as you are. Do you have any advice for somebody like me who is very pig-headed and who does not listen to my own advice?
Okay, there will be that fact that you just told the world that we're workaholics. Thank you so much
for
that. But you neglected to mention that we're firstborn neurotic overachievers, and so there, as being classic galactical hall monitors, we want to make sure everything is done well. That said, I had a great manager who said, and he knew better than to tell me to stop working. That wasn't going to work. But he just walked by my desk and slyly slid out this comment. You know, every once in a while, you just got to sharpen the axe. Now, if you've ever chopped wood, you know that a sharper axe make it a whole lot more fun. So one of the things you can do is marry somebody who's fun, but you want to make sure that they have a job because usually they just want to have fun. But the other thing is, too, that you find that you're more creative when you give yourself some space. And entrepreneurs spend way too much time working in the business instead of on the business. And so it's great to step back for a minute to see what's going on. But when it comes to negotiation, women intentionally get too much trapped in the empathetic. They try to be they're empathy driven because they're such good listeners. And so often we spend our time and our energy helping people in ways that we're not being paid for. So as an entrepreneur, as a negotiator, one of the things that you want to be able to do is to get the other side's position, but you don't have to give them what they want just because they need it. It's you want to be sure it's what expense are you given? And people today don't just pay with their wallet. They pay with their eyeballs and their attention. And so the empathy thing is a good thing. That's why we give so much value. And, of course, Don Hudson and U.S. Learning specialize in how to sell that value proposition. But you also have to be willing to say, no, it's not worth it. Sometimes we're looking at just covering that bottom line, But
right,
when
right.
you say no, I'm sorry, I'd love to help you. Let me give you the name of somebody who will do this for free, or who will, you know, do this at a different level. And then when we can work together, come on back. So you're not hurting their feelings, which is one primary mm-hmm. thing a woman has an issue with, because we're generally too emotional. We can't not be emotional. But anger, which is something that you and I and lots of people will do something and be angry about it. That'll make your back hurt, too. So you need to take that break. You really do want to take that break.
Now, you said something earlier, too, that is very important, and I certainly understand the distinction, but could you elaborate on the difference of working in your business or on your business? A lot of people don't really understand that distinction. Yeah, they
will. You know what? If you're a cupcake maker, you're so darn busy whipping up batter and, you know, putting sprinkles on cupcakes, you're not paying attention to the fact that the girl at the front desk is in a bad mood, and she's mm-hmm. not treating your customers with that cupcake smile, or that your bathrooms are dirty, or that right. your cash flow hasn't been paid. You haven't paid attention to the accounts receivable, or you're not following up you're not doing something special for your regular customers. That's the high line, you know, that's the high road. That's what you're looking at to create a better experience. At the end of the day, a good entrepreneur or anybody in business looks at what kind of experience is the consumer having, because mm-hmm. that's what Gen X and Gen Y, which drive the largest percentage of consumers right now, are looking for. It's the experience. It's not your experience. It's their experience.
Right.
And so when you're
working... And it's not necessarily customer service. It's customer experience, which in my way of thinking, two different things.
Yeah, that's a good distinction, Denise. Customer experience and customer service are two different things. What I consider service, you might not. But, you know, that's when you have to kind of look at where you're spending your time. And quite frankly, I just posted something on LinkedIn to say, what kind of project software are you looking at? Now, that doesn't necessarily mean for a project if you're not a consultant or a writer or a speaker. But, I mean, when you look at where you're spending your time, you know, a lot of people spend their time trying to be on social media instead of using social media. So they waste time there. They waste time doing not dollar productive activities. Now, you know, as an entrepreneur, you wear all the hats. You're the janitor, you're the mm-hmm. CEO, you're the accountant. But if you're paying yourself $6 an hour, you need to know what you're doing. Now, sometimes you need to do it just for therapy. But the fact is you need to have a good delegation system, and that requires a good business plan. So part of your negotiation planning is, what are you doing in the case where you need to delegate, and how do you negotiate that?
Right. And so many people who are, you know, first starting out in whatever industry that they're starting out at, whether it's a virtual assistant, an online business manager, social media marketer, whatever it is that they're doing, they pretty much have to do everything starting out, which means that you're literally doing everything from cleaning the bathroom to, you know, doing your own bookwork to your taxes and everything. But there does come a point when you understand, or you should understand, that if you're billing out at $75 or $95 an hour, you should not be doing $10 an hour work. You find
that's a good point.
You
know,
team members. And you don't work below your pay grade ever. You just don't do it.
That is correct. And, you know, one of the things that I think is real important for your listeners to hear right now is the power of compromise. And Don Hudson does that exceedingly well. So I want Don to take over on what we need to know about compromise.
Yeah, this is fun doing this with Terry, Denise. So thank you for the opportunity for both of us to be on this call. To Terry's or to
you, crazy.
Good. To your earlier point, I'll quote Patricia Fripp. She said, there's no virtue in doing something really, really well that you should not be doing at all. So sometimes when we're billing out at the dollars you mentioned and we're doing small tasks, sometimes that's not insightful. But I want to get back to one idea on negotiating. I want to be real sure we got into this call today. And that's the concept of compromise. Because most people think that the number one way to negotiate is to compromise. In fact, that's all you hear them talk about in the government these days, that we've got to compromise. And let's just say, Denise, that I'm advertising a used car for $12,000 that I want to sell. You're thinking about a car for a family member, and you respond to my ad. You come look at the car. We drive around the few blocks, and you like it, and you say, you know what, I like the car pretty well, and it looks like it's a good car, but I think $12,000 is too high. I'll give you $10,000 for it. Now, if I'm asking 12 and you're offering me 10, what is the logical number for us to arrive at?
11.
Everybody thinks you got to compromise. You got to split the difference. That is
really
not necessarily the case. So rather than me saying to you, well, I guess the logical number, if you think it's worth 10, I'll take 11 for it and we'll compromise. But that's not the best way to negotiate. First of all, I'd like to mention that compromise is not a strategy, it's a tactic. And it should only be used very late in the negotiations process. For example, I might say to you, well, Denise, I can understand you don't want to pay 12, but I've done a good bit of research, and I know what a problem-free car this has been. And based on the values that I've seen on the Internet, I'm convinced it's really worth 12. But I will say this, in the interest of good faith negotiations, I would let you have it for 11.6. So I've come down a little bit, but I'm not 11, really
11.6, not 11.5.
Right. Well, yeah. Say 11.6.
That's interesting.
And
okay.
And anyway, you say, well, you know what? It does look like a really good car, and I'm glad to hear it's been problem free. I tell you, I'll give you 11.4 for it. Anyway, now we've talked a little bit, and you've kicked the tires, you've looked in the trunk, you've looked under the hood, and now we're maybe 20 or 30 minutes into this process. So as it gets later in the process, that's one of the things you want to consider and compromise. Don't go there too early. If you go there too early, you're going to leave money on the table. So go to compromise late in the process and go there with the spread is small. For example, the difference between 11.6 and 11.5 is a very small spread. Now, we've been talking for 30 minutes now. You've really looked over the car quite thoroughly. And then I say, well, you know, it's obvious you like the car and I do want to sell it. So while I did not intend to take less than 12, I'll split the difference with you and let's do a 11,550. And I put my hand out to shake hands with you. If you shake hands with me, and this is step number three, tie it to a resolution. If you shake hands with me, we've got a deal. So let me recap. If you're going to compromise, don't go there too early. It's going to cost you. Go there late in the negotiations process. Go there when the spread between your position and their position is thin. And go there in a means of trying to tie it to a resolution. And that's how to compromise.
Close the deal. Gotcha.
Close the deal, yeah.
Close the deal. I understand. Well, I know in your book you talk about competitive negotiations and gaining an unfair advantage. Can you elaborate on that?
Yeah. The competitive negotiation is a win-lose negotiation that's based on skill and nerve because it takes courage to be a competitive negotiator. And you got to be ruthless about the dollars involved. And you know going in, if you're going to be competitive, that it's a win-lose, and your plan is to be the winner, and they're going to be the loser. And that's your plan. And you're thinking, it's by golly, we've got a finite pie here, and I want to get the biggest piece of this pie I can get. So you fight for it, and you're tough. And maybe you're not very interpersonally adaptable in the process. And you try to get the biggest piece of pie you can get, where collaboration, conversely, is, you know, if we really work well together and we get your team of three people and my team of three people and we've got a lot at stake in this negotiation, let's get our heads together. You know, all of us are smarter than one of us. Let's figure out a way to cook a bigger pie. And that's when you come up with non-traditional solutions to problems and people get creative and they enjoy working together, and that's what collaboration is all about.
So collaboration
again,
is certainly better than being competitive about it.
You know, at U.S. Learning, we teach it. We see it as preferable. It's our preferred method of going to market. But then again, if somebody wants to compete, by golly, I'll get in the ring with them. I'm pretty good there, too. So,
well, I know. I just bought a car from you.
Yeah, right. And it was pretty difficult, huh?
Yeah, I don't even know what kind of car it was.
Yeah. And you know a funny thing, Denise, even in a competitive negotiations, after you shake hands with somebody, you tend to forget any of the pain that took place in the process. You just got the deal done, and And then you're both okay with it because you agreed on it. You move on.
Sure, sure. Well, what
else
should people
know about? I'll mention one other technique on negotiations that I think would be good for your listeners. I haven't talked much about the avoidance strategy. Avoidance and accommodation.
That's what I was going to ask you. Yeah, I was
great. Let me touch on them briefly.
I'm so glad. Okay.
Okay. Avoidance is primarily the place where people with the worst case of negotiophobia go. They do not want to engage. So they will put off a negotiation as long as they can, many times to the detriment of the end result. So avoidance is to just push it back and put it off. And we say that if you get competent with your skill sets, you'll be able to go forth into a negotiation without ever having a desire to avoid. Now, there's one thing we call justifiable avoidance. For example, I had a guy who called me a couple of months ago who wanted to come by and have me demo the new Toshiba copy machine. And I said to him, well, I appreciate your call, but I really don't care for the demo because I bought a copy machine a few months ago. And incidentally, I buy all my office equipment from one company who's a longtime vendor but also a longtime client of mine. So I would be wasting your time and mine, so I'll pass, but thank you for your call. Now, that's called justifiable avoidance, and that happens when you already have a superior solution in place. So you proactively push back any negotiation. So those are a couple of thoughts about avoidance. Now, let's talk about accommodation for a minute. A lot of people think that accommodation is going to be a means of building a relationship, and I think I intimated earlier it's really more about testing a relationship than building one. A lot of people accommodate too soon, they accommodate too generously, and they give too much away. And it's kind of like a poor use of the compromise. We need to make sure we know the skills that will enable us to protect ourselves in a negotiation. So when you're accommodating, know what you're going to give up, know why you're giving it up, and know what you're going to try to get in return as you accommodate and give up something. So some of these
are such an important thing. I'm so glad you brought that up. I mean, and I'll tell you why in a moment. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, I was just going to say in the 1 minute negotiator, which by the way, it's of course available at Amazon or wherever. Most of the bookstores have it, but that's a great little book to read. And it's not one they're going to want to give away. If you get that book, you're going to want to underline and write in the margin and highlight and make it a course of study, even though it's only 139 pages. It's jam-packed with great information. It's got a glossary of terms in the back, and it's going to help people really start on their way to mastering their negotiation process.
Excellent. And it's also can be found on your website as well. I saw it there yesterday.
Yep. It is at donhudson.com as well.
Okay. Terry, do you have anything you'd like to chime in with?
Yeah, I think Terry has some wrap-up remarks as well. Denise, I'm going to give it back to her.
Thank you.
Thanks, Denise. Hey, one thing I wanted to mention, and women are notorious for getting caught in this trick bag, and that is, you know when Don says you extend your hand out and you shake hands?
Mm-hmm.
That is not the end of negotiations, and women undoubtedly will think it is. It's not done until everything is signed, sealed, and delivered, and typically what happens is there is a tactic called nibbling. And that doesn't happen all the time, but you want to be very careful with that. A woman has lost in negotiations because she shook on something and thought it was done when, in fact, it wasn't. So we want to be sure as women that we understand because we'll assume that that is completed when, in fact, it may not be. And so you want to check the fine print because all of a sudden the terms may have changed. So always go to document. We say that anyway. Always go to document and make sure that we've completed that specific part of the negotiations. We don't want to get stung on that. That's a bad one. But one of the biggest things that women do very well is you want to do some deep preparation. Don talked about it when he spoke about discovery early in the program. And preparation is the one thing that women do pretty well. Novice negotiators really think the deals are won or lost at the negotiation table, when in fact the impact on negotiations is really done before the meeting. Preparation is a great thing. Women are typically good listeners, so they might be taking notes. But you want to reach a collaborative agreement. You can only do that when you're acutely aware of where the differences are between the negotiables and the non-negotiables of an agreement. There are very different specificity. So you want to be clear of their distinction between those wants and those needs. Everybody wants everything, but what do they really need? As an example, you know, especially when negotiating, as an example for a service, you know, you have no negotiation if you positively have a drop-dead date. That is a non-negotiable. That's what George calls a red chip. It's non-negotiable. Blue chips can have some flexibility. Well, I really need this project done by the end of the week, but I could wait until Monday morning at 8 o'clock. Well, hello, that's 48 hours. If you need that time to do a better job, mm-hmm. that's, you know, that's a good opportunity. And green chips are those concessions, and women generally make ineffective concessions. Because we're so accommodative, we try to please everybody in the party. We confuse agreement with those negotiations. It's an accommodation, it's not a strategy. So once you shake your hand system review, we want to make sure that you know negotiations are complete after you look at the multiple phases that might ensue after that. So mm-hmm. make sure it's written, make sure it's executed, review it carefully, and then be happy. And then, you know, you can do whatever you want to do to make sure that everybody is a happy camper. Like Don said, women think that it's going to be a damage of relationship when, in fact, it's a boundary. And you know how women are in boundaries. We could do another whole show on boundaries.
Yeah, yeah. And you're so right, and I'm glad you brought that up, because it does happen, and in my industry it's called scope creep, that dreaded scope creep. And you have to just say, no, you know, this is not the scope of work that we agreed on. I'm really sorry. We've gone as far as we can go with this. Now we have to negotiate another price. We have to negotiate another project. This one's done. And it's very difficult for women in particular to do, and I've had to learn to do that. It's not fun. It's not a comfortable thing to do. But you will be working many, many, many hours for free if you don't learn to say no. And say it in a very compassionate and very business-like professional way. But the scope is the scope, and here's where we are. And what I have found when I do that, on the few occasions I've had to just say, okay, we're done now, people go, oh, I'm so sorry. They didn't really realize because, and this was my fault, I didn't point out to them how far out of scope we were. This is my own fault. I'm learning now to say, listen, this is way out of the project brief. What do we want to do about this? And everybody's
happy.
Well,
I think sometimes we have to educate our services, especially, you know, I mean, if you have something that's a commodity, it's fairly, you know, if you're buying a pound of sugar or a pound of cupcakes, you know what
right.
that is. But when you're in a service situation, you know, sometimes we'll throw some extra things in just to make it easy. But that's part of that nibbling thing. I think it's a boundary issue. Women are particularly less strong about what boundaries there are because, again, that accommodation, that adaptability piece is in there. But it doesn't really hurt to say, you know what, Don, that's just not part of our original agreement. I'm perfectly happy to handle that for you, but that'll be billed at a different time. You know, amount or whatever. You just got to educate people. I mean, people work better in structure, and they don't know what it takes to do, especially what you do with virtual assistants. They don't understand the full scope of the work. So you've got to give them a benefit of a doubt. But I know this is going to help a lot of your people. And so that we do have a website called the 1MinuteNegotiator.com. You might want to post some comments or questions there. We're happy to help you answer them.
Great. I have had so much fun talking with both of you two, and I'm so glad that you were able to come on. Thank you so, so much for being here with me today, Terry Murphy and Don Hudson. And you have given some really, really valuable information to our listeners, and I know they appreciate it just as much as I do. Is there anything else that you would like to say before we sign off?
Well, I think, Denise, just that we have thoroughly enjoyed being with you and hope that your listeners got a lot of good ideas. And we also hope that we've inspired them to become students of negotiations and use that even when it really doesn't matter that much, because it's just great practice every single day. And there's a lot at stake on some of the bigger deals, but the practice is with the little deals, you know.
Absolutely. And negotiation, like I said earlier, we negotiate all day long whether we're aware of it or not.
That's right.
But you might as well get darn good at it.
That's exactly right. So we enjoyed being with you, Denise. We appreciate the invitation. We hope your listeners will visit our websites.
Well, thank you so much, and I hope you both come back again one day soon. So thank you. Terry, do you have anything you want to say before we go?
practice, practice, practice. You know, if we were in a third world country, we'd be bargaining for those beans every day. We just don't. So it's a good thing to practice.
Hey, Denise, nice. I got one other wrap-up thought. Just for being an American, you've won the lottery.
Oh, believe me, I know this. I love my country. I have always loved my country. I don't like a lot of what I see that's going on right now, but, you know, you can't like everything.
Yep.
I love
that's
my country.
Well,
I'm so blessed to live here.
There you go. Well, I wish all your listeners the best for a great weekend.
Thank you so much. Well, thank you, everybody, for being here. The show will be available for download, excuse me, in about an hour. And this is Denise Griffiths with Terry Murphy and Don Hudson wishing you a wonderful weekend, and I will see y'all next week. Thank you, Don. Thank you, Terry.
You're welcome. Thanks, Denise. Take care, everybody.
Bye-bye.